Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I'm here to read to you from Homer's Odyssey. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Odyssey, and we are now at Book 17. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, Telemachus, beloved son of godlike Odysseus, then bound underneath his feet the beautiful sandals, and took up a powerful spear which fitted his hand's grip, on his way to the city, and spoke, and going, he spoke to his swineherd. "Father, I'm going to the city, so that my mother will see me, since, as I suppose, she will never give over that bitter lamentation of hers and tearful crying until she sees me herself. But here is what I will tell you to do." Line 10. "Take this unhappy stranger to the city, so that there he can beg his dinner, and any who will can give him his bit of bread and his cupful. It is not for me to put up with everybody. Now, when I have troubles on my mind. Therefore, even if the stranger is terribly angry, it will be only the worse for him. Speaking the truth is the way I like best." Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, "Dear friend, neither do I desire that he should detain me here. A beggar is better begging his dinner in the city than in the country. Whoever wants will give me something, for I am no longer the right age to stay on the farms, the right age to carry out any task that the foreman imposes on me. Go on, then. This man, the one you have asked, will take me, as soon as I have warmed myself by the fire and there is some sunlight. These clothes are very poor, and I hope no morning frost undoes me. They say it is very far to the city." So he spoke, but Telemachus strode out through the steading, walking fast, and planning evil things for the suitors. But when he arrived at the well-settled house, he carried his spear over to a tall column and propped it against it, and he himself went inside, stepping over the stone threshold. Far the first to see him was his nurse, Eurycleia. As she spread the fleeces on the elaborate chairs, she burst out in tears and went straight to him, and around him the other serving maids of patient-hearted Odysseus clustered and made much of him, line 35, and kissed him on his head and shoulders. But now circumspect Penelope came down from her chamber, looking like Artemis or like golden Aphrodite, and burst into tears and threw her arms around her beloved son and kissed him on his head and both of his shining eyes, and tearfully spoke winged words and addressed him, "You've come, Telemachus, sweet light, and I thought I would never see you again when you had gone in the ships to Pylos secretly and against my will for news of the father you love. But come now, tell me what sights you've been seeing." Line 45. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, "Mother, do not stir up a scene of sorrow, nor trouble my heart once more. Now I have escaped from sheer destruction, but go, wash with water, and put clean clothing upon your body, and go on to the upper story with your attendant women. Vow to all the gods the service of complete hecatombs, if Zeus grants requital for what is done to us, but I will go to the place of meeting, so I can summon my guest, who came along with me as I made my way here. I sent him on ahead of me with my godlike companions," line 55, "and told Piraeus to take him to his own house and give him forthright honor and entertainment until my arrival." So he spoke, and she had no winged words for an answer. And she washed with water and put clean clothing upon her body and vowed to all the gods the service of complete hecatombs if Zeus were to grant requital for what had been done to them. Telemachus then went striding out through the palace and left it, holding his spear, and a pair of light-footed dogs went with him. Athena drifted an enchantment of grace upon him, and all the people had their eyes on him as he came on. Around him the haughty suitors clustered, line 65. They all were speaking him fair, but in the deep of their hearts were devising evils. All right, so Telemachus just asserted himself with his mother and said, "Quit whining, go upstairs, wash your face, get dressed. My goodness, you look like you're in mourning." He looks better, thanks to Athena. And, of course, the suitors say, "Wow, doesn't Telemachus look bold and ready to lead in the stead of his father?" Something like that. "I guess we better do something." They're devising evils. Line 67. Telemachus himself avoided their crowding numbers, and where Mentor was sitting, and Antiphus and Halitherses, the men whom from the first had been his father's companions, there he went and sat down, and they questioned him about everything. Now Piraeus, the famous spearman, came near them, bringing the guest through the city to the assembly. Nor did Telemachus stay for long far away from the guest, but came and stood by him. First of the two to speak was Piraeus, who then said to him, Telemachus, have your women come to my house with all speed, so I can send back the gifts which Menelaus has given you. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, Piraeus, since we do not know how all this will come out, or whether the haughty suitors will kill me here in my palace treacherously, line 80, and divide up all my father's possessions, I wish that you yourself or one of these men should keep them and have the profit. But if I can plot their death and destruction, bring them to my house, and there will be gratitude shown on both sides. So he's going to keep the treasure for him. So he spoke, and led the long-suffering stranger back to his house, line 85. And when they had arrived at the well-settled palace, they laid down their mantles along the chairs and the benches, and stepped into the bathtubs, smooth-polished and bathed there. Then, when the maids had bathed them, and anointed them with oil, and put cloaks of thick fleece and tunics upon them, they went forth from the bathing-tubs, and took their places on settles. A maid-servant brought water for them, and poured it from a splendid and golden pitcher, holding it above a silver basin for them to wash, and she pulled a polished table before them. A grave housekeeper brought in the bread and served it to them, adding many good things to it, generous with her provisions. His mother sat opposite, beside the pillar, supporting the hall, sitting back on a chair and turning fine yarn on a distaff. They put forth their hands to the good things that lay ready before them, but when they had put away their desire for eating and drinking, it was circumspect Penelope, line 100, who began their discourse. Telemachus, I will go back now to my upper chamber and lie down on my bed, which is made sorrowful, always disordered with the tears I've wept, ever since Odysseus went with the sons of Atreus to Troy, and you had no patience to tell me, before the haughty suitors arrive at our palace, any news you may have heard of your father's homecoming. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to her in answer, Then, my mother, I will tell you the whole true story. We went to Pylos, and to Nestor, shepherd of the people, line 110, and he, in his high house, gave me hospitality, and loving free attention as a father would to his own beloved son, who was newly arrived from a long voyage elsewhere. So he freely took care of me, with his own glorious children, but he said he had heard nothing about enduring Odysseus, nor whether he was alive or dead, from any of the peoples of earth. He sent me to Atreus's son, spear-famed Menelaus, giving me passage with his own horses and compact chariot. There I saw Helen of Argos, for whose sake Argives and Trojans had undergone much hardships by the god's will. Menelaus of the great war cry questioned me, line 120, when I came to him and asked what need had brought me to Laureus Lake Dimon, whereupon I told him the whole truth of my story, and he in turn spoke to me then and gave me an answer. Oh, for shame! It was in the bed of a bold and strong man they wished to lie, they themselves being all unwarlike, as when a doe... What was it like with these, what does Menelaus think it's like when these suitors are trying to take over Odysseus's wife and property? As when a doe has brought her fawns to the fare of a lion and put them there to sleep, they are newborn and still suckling, then wanders out into the foothills and the grassy corners grazing there, but now the lion comes back to his own lair and visits a shameful destruction on both mother and children. So now, Odysseus will visit shameful destruction on these men. This is Telemachus telling his mother what Menelaus said. O Father Zeus and Athena and Apollo, I wish that as he was when, upon a time, in strong-founded Lesbos, he stood up and wrestled Philomelides from a challenge and threw him strongly, so delighting all the Achaeans, I wish that such an Odysseus would come now among the suitors. They would all find death was quick and marriage a painful matter. But for what you entreat me for and ask me about, I will not turn away from the tale and speak idly, nor will I deceive you, but of what the ever-truthful old man of the sea told me. I will tell you all without concealment and hold back nothing. He said that he had seen him, Odysseus, on an island, suffering strong pains in the palace of the nymph Calypso. And she detains him by constraint, and he cannot make his way to his country, for he has not any ships by him, nor any companions who can convey him back across the sea's wide ridges. So spoke Atreus' son, spear-famed Menelaus, this is Telemachus telling his mother, after I had done all this, I came back. The immortals gave me a following wind and brought me quickly to the dear land of my fathers. So he spoke and stirred the spirit within her. And now, line 150, Theoclymenus, a godlike man, spoke to both of them. O respected wife of Odysseus, son of Laertes, attend my word, because he does not understand clearly, but I shall prophesy truly to you and hold back nothing. Line 155. Zeus be my witness, first of the gods, and the table of friendship, and the hearth of blameless Odysseus, to which I come as a suppliant, that Odysseus is already here, in the land of his fathers, sitting still or advancing, learning of all these evil actions, and devising evils for all of the suitors. Such was the bird sign I interpreted, and I told it to Telemachus as I sat aboard the strong-benched vessel. Then in turn, circumspect Penelope answered him, If only this word, stranger and guest, and of course these are all the uses of the word Zinnia, if only this word, stranger and guest, were brought to fulfillment, soon you would be aware of my love and many gifts given by me, so any man who met you would call you blessed. So now these three were conversing thus with each other. But meanwhile, and now we have a scene change, line 167. Right after meanwhile, you may as well draw a line right there. Meanwhile, think of a scene change. Before the palace of Odysseus, the suitors amused themselves with discs and with light spears for throwing on a leveled floor, unruly men as they always had been. So we just left indoors with Penelope, with Telemachus, and the stranger that he brought with him, telling Penelope all they found out, and then we went outside to see the suitors amusing themselves, throwing discs and light spears, things like that. Line 170. But when it was time for dinner, and the sheep from the fields have been coming in from all sides, and the same men as usual drove them, then Medon spoke to the suitors. It was he among all the heralds whom they liked best, and he used to wait on them at their feasting. Young men, since you have all taken your pleasure in exercise, go into the house so we can make dinner ready. Nothing is any worse when meals are taken in season. He spoke, and they stood up and went and did as he told them, and they, when they had gone into the well-settled palace, laid their mantles down along the chairs and the benches, and set about sacrificing great-sized sheep and fat goats, and sacrificing an ox of the herd, and fattened porkers as they prepared their feast. That was line 182, the first half of it. Now you can draw another line right through the middle of that line. With but Odysseus, we have a scene change again. Now we go from the unholy suitors who are just getting ready for the meal to Odysseus, back to Odysseus and the swineherd. But Odysseus now and the noble swineherd were stirring themselves to go to town from the country. First of the two to speak was the swineherd, leader of people. Line 185. Stranger, since then you are eager to go to the city today, as my master told you to do, though I could have wanted you rather to stay here and guard the steading, even so I go in awe and fear of him and any reproaches he might give me. A scolding comes hard from a master. So then let us be on our way, for most of the day is already gone. The evening is coming on. You may find it colder. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, I see, I understand. You speak to one who follows you. Let us be on your way. You may be my guide on the journey. Only give me some kind of cudgel, if you have any cut, to lean on. They say the road is very slippery. So he's looking for a walking stick. He spoke, and over his shoulder slung the ugly wallet that was full of holes with a twist of rope attached to dangle it. Eumaeus gave him a walking stick that suited his fancy, and the two of them went on, line 200, with the dogs and the herdsmen staying behind to guard the farm. He led his lord to the city, looking as he did like a dismal vagabond and an old man, propping on a stick, and wore wretched clothing upon his body. Now, as they went down over the stony road and were coming close to the city, and had arrived at the fountain, sweet running and made of stone, there the townspeople went for their water. Ithacus had made this, and Neritus, and Polyctor, and around it was a grove of black poplars, trees that grow by water, all in a circle. And there was cold water pouring down from the rock above. Over it had been built an altar to the nymphs, and there all the wayfarers made their sacrifice. There Melanthius, son of Dolius, came upon them as he drove his goats, the ones that were finest among his goat flocks, for the suitors' dinner, and two other herdsmen went along with him. I'll take a pause here to tell you that Melanthius will not have a very nice finish in the story. Melanthius is apparently a goat herd, And we will see Melanthius, and then I believe his sister, later on, just coming up in the next few books, we'll see Melanthius. And yes, and his sister Melantho. She shows up in book 18 at line 321. But Melanthus is not going to have a very nice finish. Remember that I told you that. Line 215. Seeing the two, he spoke and named them, giving them curses overbearing and shameful, and stirred the heart of Odysseus. See now how the rascal comes on leading a rascal about, like guides what is like itself. Like guides what is like itself, just as a god does. Where, you detestable swineherd, are you taking this wretched man, this bothersome beggar who spoils the fun of the feasting, the kind who stands and rubs his shoulders on many doorposts, begging only for handouts, never for swords or cauldrons? If you would turn him over to me to keep my steading, then he could drink whey and build up a big leg muscle, sweeping my pins and carrying green stuff in to the young goats. But since he has learned nothing but mischief, and remember, this is Melanthius speaking to the good swineherd, the faithful swineherd, and Odysseus. Let's see. He's learned nothing but mischief, line 226. He will not be willing to go to work, but would rather go begging all through the district, asking for handouts and feeding up his bottomless belly. But I tell you this straight out, and it will be a thing accomplished. If he ever comes near the house of godlike Odysseus, his ribs and head will feel the weight of plenty of footstools flung at him all over the house by the hands of heroes. So he spoke, and as he went, he recklessly lashed out with his heel to the hip. This means Melanthius just kicked Odysseus. If you want to find out what happens to Melanthius for kicking Odysseus here, you can go forward and see what Telemachus does to him in book 22 at line 474. He lashed out with his heel to the hip, but failed to knock him out of the pathway, for Odysseus stood it, unshaken, while he pondered within him whether to go for him with his cudgel and take the life from him, or pick him up like a jug and break his head on the ground. Yet still he stood it, and kept it all inside him. The swineherd stared and cursed him, and prayed aloud with his hands uplifted, line 240. Nymphs of the fountain, daughters of Zeus, if ever Odysseus burned for you the thigh pieces of lambs or goats, wrapping them in the rich fat, then grant me this favor I ask, namely that the man himself will come home with the divinity guiding him. So, Melanthius, he would send flying all these glories you wear now in your insolence, forever loitering here in the town while useless herdsmen ruin the sheep flocks. So the faithful swineherd is praying to the nymphs here, the local goddesses, that Odysseus will come home and take care of everybody. And of course, he's walking side by side with Odysseus. Then in turn, Melanthius, the goat herd, answered him. Shame on the speaking of this nasty-minded dog. Someday I'll get him aboard a strong-benched ship and take him far from Ithaca, where he could win me a good livelihood. If only Apollo's silver bow would strike down Telemachus today in his halls, or he were killed by the suitors as surely as Odysseus far away has lost his day of homecoming. So he spoke and left them there, as they went on easily. Line 255. But he went forward and quickly came to the house of his master. He went straight on inside and sat down next to the suitors, opposite Eurymachus, whom he was fondest of. The servants, doing the dinner, placed a portion of meat before him. A grave housekeeper brought the bread and set it down for him to eat. Odysseus, on his way with the noble swineherd, stood close in front of the house, and around them came the clamor of the hollow lyre, for Phemius had struck up the music to sing. Odysseus took the swineherd's hand and said to him, Eumaeus, surely this is the handsome house of Odysseus. Line 265. Easily it is singled out and seen among many, for one part is joined to another, and the courtyard is worked on with wall and copings, and the doors have been well made with double panels. Nobody could belittle this house. And also I realize that many men are holding a feast there, for the smell of the food comes to me, and there's a clamor of the lyre which the gods made to be companion of feasting. Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, this is Homer speaking in the first person to one of the characters, to Eumaeus, you said to him in answer, easily you perceived it, nor are you otherwise without sense, but come, let us think out how we will act in these matters. Line 275. either you go on first into the well-settled palace and go among the suitors and leave me here on the outside, or if you will, stay here while I go on ahead of you. But do not be slow, or someone here outside, seeing you, might strike you or throw something. Here I bid you be careful." Then, much enduring, great Odysseus said to him in answer, "I see, I understand, you speak to one who follows you, but you go on ahead and I will stay here on the outside. I'm not unfamiliar with blows and things thrown at me. The spirit in me is enduring, since I have suffered much hardship on the waves and in the fighting, so let this adventure follow. Even so, there is no suppressing the ravenous belly, a cursed thing, which bestows many evils on men, seeing that even for its sake the strong-built ships are handled across the barren great sea, bringing misfortune to enemies." Now as these two, line 290, were conversing thus with each other, a dog who was lying there raised his head and ears. This was Argus, patient-hearted Odysseus's dog, whom he himself raised, but got no joy of him, since before that he went to sacred Ilion. In the days before, the young men had taken him out to follow goats of the wild and deer and rabbits, but now he'd been put aside, with his master absent, and lay on the deep pile of dung from the mules and oxen, which lay abundant before the gates, so that the servants of Odysseus could take it to his great estate for manuring. Here we learn that Odysseus had a dog who apparently was a pup when he left, so he got no joy of him. He didn't get to raise him or enjoy him. And here is this dog, 20 years later, still alive, and now his poor dog is lying on the dung heap. Line 300. There the dog Argus lay in the dung, all covered with dog ticks. Now, as he perceived that Odysseus had come close to him, he wagged his tail and laid both his ears back, only he now no longer had the strength to move any closer to his master, who, watching him from a distance, without Eumaeus noticing, secretly wiped a tear away and said to him, "Eumaeus, this is amazing, this dog that lies on the dunghill. The shape of him is splendid, and yet I cannot be certain whether he had the running speed to go with this beauty, or is just one kind of table dog that gentlemen keep, and is for only for show that their master care for them." Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, you said to him in answer, "This, it is too true, is the dog of a man who perished far away. If he were such in build and performance as when Odysseus left him behind when he went to Ilion, soon you could see his speed and his strength for yourself. Never could any wild animal in the profound depths of the forest escape once he pursued. He was very clever at tracking." So Odysseus said this to the swineherd to see, oh my goodness, is this the same dog I left? And Eumaeus is saying, wow, you wouldn't believe what a good dog this was. And poor Odysseus, of course, has missed everything. But now he's in bad times. His master, far from his country, has perished, and the women are careless and do not look after him. And serving men, line 320, when their masters are no longer about to make them work, are no longer willing to do their rightful duties. For Zeus of the wide brows takes away one half of the virtue from a man once the day of slavery closes upon him. So he spoke, and went into the strongly settled palace, and strode straight on, line 325, to the great hall and the haughty suitors. But the doom of dark death now closed over the dog Argus, when, after 19 years had gone by, he had seen Odysseus. This is really a touching scene. The dog sees Odysseus, he wags his tail, Odysseus cries, and the dog dies. Godlike Telemachus was the first by far to notice the swineherd as he came into the house, and quickly he nodded to summon him over, line 330. The swineherd, looking about him, picked up a chair that was lying near where the carver sat, cutting much meat for the suitors as these feasted all through the palace. This he took and placed it by Telemachus's table, facing him, then sat down there himself, and the herald took a portion and served him and passed him bread from the basket. Close after him, Odysseus now came into the palace, looking as he did like a dismal vagabond and an old man propping on a stick, and wore foul clothing upon his body. He sat down then on the ashwood threshold inside the doorway, leaning against the doorpost of cypress wood, which the carpenter once had expertly planed and drawn it true to a chalk line. This is reminiscent, of course, that Odysseus's house is extremely well built. Here he is sitting inside the threshold, and he probably remembers how he had each part of this house made or did it himself. But Telemachus spoke a word to the swineherd, calling him over, taking and giving him a whole loaf from the beautiful basket, with meat, as much food as both arms could hold in their compass. Line 3, 4, 5. Take all this and give it to the stranger, but also tell him to go about among the suitors and beg from all of them. Modesty for a man in need is not a good quality. So he spoke, and the swineherd went when he heard his order. He came and stood by Odysseus, close by Odysseus, and spoke in winged words. Line 350. Stranger, Telemachus gives you this, and also he tells you to go about among the suitors and beg from all of them. He said that modesty for a poor man is no good quality. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, Lord Zeus, let Telemachus be one of the prosperous men. Let everything befall him that his heart longs for. He spoke, and with both hands, accepting everything, laid it there in front of his feet on top of the ugly wallet and ate it. All the while the singer sang in the halls. Then, when he had eaten his dinner and the divine singer was finished, the suitors raised their tumult along the halls. But Athena came then and stood close by Odysseus of Laertes and stirred him to go collect his bits of bread from the suitors and so learn which of them were fair, which unfair. But even so, she would not deliver any of them from disaster. This is a little bit of foreshadowing in lines 360 to 364. Why is Odysseus going to go beg from each of the suitors? Why would he push it when he knows they're unholy suitors? Why would Telemachus tell him this is what he should do? You better not be picky. Beggars can't be choosy, is what he said, really. And that modesty for a poor man is no good quality. What that means is beggars can't be choosy. And so they're doing this to find out which of the suitors will practice proper xenia, which will give the beggar something and which will treat him horribly. And then we learned in line 364, it didn't even matter whether they're fair or unfair, but even so, she would not deliver any of them from disaster. Line 365, he went on his way from left to right, so to beg from each man, reaching his hand out always, as if for a long time he had been a beggar. And they took pity and gave, and they wondered at him. They asked each other what man he was and where he came from. But now Melanthius, the goat-herding man, this is who ran into them on the way in and said, you better not go to the house of Odysseus. And I mentioned what Telemachus will do to him in Book 22, if you looked there. But now Melanthius, the goat-herding man, said to them, line 370, hear me now, you suitors of our glorious queen, concerning this stranger, for I've seen him before. Know then that it was the swineherd who guarded him here. But I do not know clearly who the man is himself or what race he claims to come of. So he spoke. Antinous spoke then and scolded the swineherd. Oh, most distinguished swineherd, why did you bring this fellow to the city? Do we not already have enough other vagabonds and bothersome beggars to ruin our feasting? Or, now that men gather here to eat up your master's substance, is that not enough that you had to invite this one in also? Line 380. Then, O swineherd Aeneas, you said to him in answer, Antinous, though you are noble, this was not well spoken. For who goes visiting elsewhere so as to call in another stranger, unless he is one who works for the people, either a prophet or a healer of sickness, or a skilled workman, or inspired singer, one who can give delight by his singing? These are the men who all over the endless earth are invited. But nobody would ask in a beggar, one who would feed on himself. You, though, beyond all other suitors, are heavy on the servants of Odysseus, and me most of all. But I, for my part, do not care, while still circumspect Penelope lives in the palace, together with godlike Telemachus. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, Silence! Do not answer him at such length. Antinous has made it his habit always to irritate others with hurtful words and stir them up, and encourages others to do so. So he spoke, and then addressed his words to Antinous. Antinous, as a father for his son, you take good care of me. When you tell our stranger guest, our Xenia, to get out of the palace with a strict word, may this not be the end God makes of it. Take and give, I do not begrudge you, I even urge you, and do not have any respect for my mother, nor yet for any thrall beside who lives in the house of God like Odysseus. But such is not the kind of intention you keep within you. You are more eager to eat yourself than to give to another. Then in turn Antinous said to him in answer, High spoken, intemperate Telemachus, what accusations you have made! If all the suitors would hand him this kind of present, the house would then do without him for the space of 3 months. So Antinous says, I can't believe you tell me to be good to this vagabond. If we'd all act like this, maybe he'd get out of here and we wouldn't see him for another 3 months. So he spoke and picked up a footstool that lay by the table and showed it, line 410. He had his shining feet on it as he feasted, but all the others gave to him as they filled his wallet with bread and meat. And Odysseus was on the point of finishing his test of the Achaeans and getting back free to his doorsill, but now he stood by Antinous and spoke a word to him. He's ready to test Antinous. Line 415. Give, dear friend. You seem to me of all the Achaeans not the worst, but the best. You look like a king. Therefore you ought to give me a better present of food than the others have done, and I will sing your fame all over the endless earth, for I too once lived in my own house, among people prospering in wealth, and often I gave to a wanderer according to what he was and wanted when he came to me. And I had serving men by thousands, and many another good thing by which men live well and are called prosperous. Only Zeus, son of Cronos, spoiled it all. Somehow he wished to. When he put it into my head to go with the roving pirates to Egypt, a long voyage, so that I must be ruined, I stayed my o'erswept ships inside the Aegyptus River, the Nile. Then I urged my eager companions to stay where they were, there, close to the fleet, and guard the ships, and was urgent with them to send lookouts to the watching places, but they followed their own impulse, and giving way to marauding violence, suddenly began plundering the Egyptians' beautiful fields and carrying off the women and innocent children, and killed the men, and soon the outcry came to the city. Here, Odysseus, not only is he testing Antinous, he's making up a story that is similar. He's saying, I had all these men, I told them to stay with the ships, but they wouldn't do it. They had to go marauding, kill, you know, maim, whatever, steal. And so it's their own fault they all expired. And of course, this is what happened with his own men, that he's making up a different circumstance. Line 435. They heard the shouting, and at the time, when dawn shows, they came on us, and all the plain was filled with horses and infantry and the glare of bronze, and Zeus, who delights in the thunder, flung down a foul panic among my companions, and none was so hardy as to stand and fight, for the evils stood in a circle around them. There they killed many of us with the sharp bronze, and others they led away alive to work for them in forced labor. But they gave me away into Cyprus, to a stranger arriving, Dimptor, Iasus's son, who was the strong king in Cyprus. From there I came here, where I am now, suffering hardships. Then, line 445, Antinous answered him in turn and said to him, What spirit brought this pain upon us to spoil our feasting? Stand off so in the middle and keep away from my table, or otherwise you may find yourself in a sorry Cyprus or Egypt. You are so bold a one and a shameless beggar. You went the whole circle and stood by all, and they all gave you recklessly, for there is no holding back nor sparing of favors from another man's goods, since each has plenty. Now resourceful Odysseus spoke, as he drew back from him. Shame! The wits in you, it is clear, do not match your outward beauty. You would not give a bit of salt to a servant in your own house, since now, sitting in another's, you could not take a bit of bread and give it to me. It is there in abundance. He spoke, and Antinous in his heart grew still more angry. Looking at him from under his brows, he addressed him in winged words. Line 460. Now I think that you can no longer make a respectable retreat out of the palace, since what you say is scurrilous. He spoke and threw the footstool and hit him in the right shoulder near the base in the back, but he stood up to it, steady as a rock. Nor did the missile thrown by Antinous shake him, but he shook his head in silence, deeply devising evils. So Antinous just threw a stool at Odysseus. Of course, it didn't even shake him, but he is deeply devising evils. Line 466. He went back to the sill, the door sill, and sat there, and spread out before him the wallet that was well filled, and spoke a word to the suitors. You who are suitors of this most glorious queen, hear me while I speak out what the heart within my breast urges. There is no grief that comes to the heart, nor yet any sorrow when a man is hit, fighting in battle for the sake of his own possessions, either to guard his shining ship or his cattle. But Antinous struck me all because of my wretched belly, that cursed thing who bestows many evils on men. Therefore, if there are any gods or any furies for beggars, Antinous may find his death before he is married. He may find death before marriage. Then Antinous, son of Epithes, gave him an answer. Go in peace, stranger, and sit down, or go away elsewhere. Or else, for the way you talk, the young men might take you and drag you by hand or foot through the house and tear the skin on your body. So he spoke, but all the rest were wildly indignant, and this is the way one of these haughty young men would speak to him. Antinous, you did badly to hit the unhappy vagabond. A curse on you, if he turns out to be some god from heaven. And of course, this is one of the reasons for practicing Xenia. You never knew when it could be a god in disguise testing you. Line 485. For the gods do take on all sorts of transformations, appearing as strangers from elsewhere, and thus they range at large through the cities, watching to see which men keep the laws and which are violent. The reader or the listener can tell by these lines that the other suitors, even though they are despicable, unholy suitors, they give to the beggar really out of superstition. It's a religious superstition, because what if it's a god in disguise? So spoke the suitors, but he paid no attention to what they were saying. But Telemachus sustained in his heart a great sorrow over the blow. Line 490. But he did not let fall from his eyes any groundward tear, but shook his head in silence, deeply devising evils. The very difficult for Telemachus to see the stool thrown at his father and do nothing about it, but he is obeying his father. But when circumspect Penelope heard that the stranger had been struck in her halls, she spoke to her serving women, "Thus I pray may the archer Apollo strike at the striker." Because, of course, Penelope is horrified that a guest in her home has been injured, and so she's hoping Apollo will give him what he deserves. Line 495. Then the housekeeper, Eurynome, spoke and answered, "If only some fulfillment befell our prayers, then not one of these men would be alive to meet the dawn in her splendor." Circumspect Penelope said to her in answer, "Mother," and of course this is not her mother, this is just a fond term, "they are all hateful, since all are devising evils, but Antinous, beyond the rest, is like black death. Here is a stranger, some unfortunate man, who goes through our palace asking alms of the men, for his helplessness forces him to it. Then all the others gave and filled his bag, but this man struck him with a footstool at the base of the right shoulder." So Penelope hears this story upstairs, and she is livid. Line 505. So Penelope, sitting up in her chamber, conversed with her serving women while great Odysseus was eating his dinner. But now she summoned the noble swineherd to her, saying, "Go on your way now, noble Eumaeus, and tell the stranger to come, so I can befriend him, and so I can ask him if he has somewhere heard any news of steadfast Odysseus, or seen him in person. He seems like a man who has wandered widely." Because, of course, Penelope will take any opportunity to speak to any stranger she can to ask if they have heard of Odysseus. Line 512. Then, first person Homer again, "O swineherd Eumaeus," you said to her in answer, "if only these Achaeans, my queen, would let you have silence. Such stories he tells! He would charm out the dear heart within you. 3 nights I had him with me, and for 3 days I detained him in my shelter, for first he came to me. He had fled from a vessel, but he has not yet told the story of all his suffering. But, as when a man looks to a singer who has been given from the gods the skill with which he sings for delight of mortals, and they are impassioned and strained to hear it when he sings to them, so he enchanted me in the halls as he sat beside me." In other words, Odysseus has quite the gift of conversation and storytelling. "He says that he's a friend by family of Odysseus, with his home in Crete, where lives the generation of Minos, and from there he made his way to this place, suffering hardships, driven helpless along." Line 525. "He claims he has heard that Odysseus is near, in the rich country of the men of Thesprotia, and alive, and bringing many treasures back to this household." Then in turn, circumspect Penelope said to him, Go now, call in here so he can tell me directly, and let these people sit by the doors and play their games, or else go and do it at home, whenever the spirit favors. For their own properties are unspoiled in their houses, bread and sweet wine, but this their own house people eat. Meanwhile, they, day by day visiting our house, and always dedicating our oxen and our sheep and fat goats, hold their festival and recklessly drink up our shining wine, and most of it is used up, for there is no man here such as Odysseus was, to keep the plague from his household. But if Odysseus could come and return to the land of his father soon with his son, he could punish the violence of these people. So she spoke, and Telemachus sneezed amain, and around him the palace re-echoed terribly to the sound. Penelope, laughing, spoke presently to Eumaeus and addressed him in winged words. Go, please, and summon the stranger into my presence. Do you not see how my son sneezed for everything I have spoken? And of course it's very unusual that Penelope takes this sneeze as an omen. In the ancient world, they are extremely superstitious. Anything unusual, anything unexpected, like a sneeze, they believe could be, oh my goodness, some type of divine intervention, or it could be an omen. And so when he tells, when she says, oh, if only Odysseus could come home, he and Telemachus could punish the violence of these people, in line 540, and then Telemachus sneezes, it's like an omen. And so she's laughing, it kind of thrills her. And she says, do you not see, line 545, how my son sneezed for everything I've spoken? May it mean that death, accomplished in full, befall the suitors, each and one, not one avoiding death and destruction. And put away in your heart this other thing that I tell you. If I learn that everything he says is truthfully spoken, I will give him beautiful clothing to wear, a tunic and a mantle. So she spoke, and the swineherd went when he heard what she told him. And he came and stood close by Odysseus and spoke in winged words. Father and friend, circumspect Penelope, mother of Telemachus, summons you, for her heart is urgent to find out from you about her husband, though she is suffering troubles. And if she learns from you that all you say is truthfully spoken, she will give you a tunic and mantle to wear, what you have need of most of all. And you, by baking your bread through the city, can keep your belly sustained, and he who will can give to you. Then in turn, much enduring, great Odysseus answered him, line 561, Eumaeus, by and by I will tell everything truly to the daughter of Icarius, circumspect Penelope. For I know well about him. This is Odysseus disguised as a beggar, saying, I know well about him, about Odysseus. We have suffered the same sad story. Only now I am afraid of this swarm of rough suitors, whose outrageous violence goes up into the iron sky. For even now, as I went through the house, doing no harm, and this man struck me and gave me over to suffering, Telemachus could not save me from this, nor could any other. Tell Penelope, therefore, for all her eagerness, to wait for me in the palace until the sun has set. Let her then question me about her husband's day of homecoming, giving me a seat close to the fire, since these are wretched clothes I have. You know this yourself. You are my first patron. So he spoke, and the swineherd went, and when he heard what he told him. Line 575. But Penelope said to him as he stepped over the threshold, You did not bring him, Eumaeus. What is this vagabond thinking? Does he fear some indignity, or is he otherwise bashful about the house? A bashful vagabond makes a bad beggar. Then, O swineherd Eumaeus, you said to her in answer, line 580, He speaks within reason, as another man might think also in keeping away from the violence of these insolent men. Therefore he tells you to wait until after the sun has gone down. For you yourself also, my queen, this way it will be much better, to talk in private to the stranger and hear his story. 9585. Then in turn, circumspect Penelope answered him, So it shall be. The stranger's thought is not without good sense, since never yet among mortal mankind have there been any men who've been so violent in their wild endeavors. So she instructed him, and the noble swineherd went back into the crowd of the suitors, line 590, when he had understood all of it. At once he spoke his winged words to Telemachus, leaning his head close to him, so that none of the others might hear him. Dear child, I'm going back to guard the pigs and that other livelihood that is yours and mine. Let all be in your charge here. First of all, take care of yourself, and be very watchful against harm to you. There are many Achaeans who wish you evil. May Zeus destroy them before they can make any harm befall us. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, So it shall be, my father. Go when you have had your supper, But come again in the morning, line 600, and bring us beautiful victims. I myself will see to things here, as will the immortals. This is really fascinating when he says, bring us beautiful victims in line 600, because the very next day, which will be the day that the suitors are all killed, is also a feast day of Apollo, and so they're going to bring three pigs to sacrifice instead of one. We know there's a festival. If you look ahead in book 20, lines 276 to 8, which is the following day, you'll see that there is a festival to Apollo. So it's a little bit prophetic, victims. So he spoke, and the other sat down again on a polished chair. But when he had had his fill of eating and drinking, he went on back to the pigs and left the courts and the palace full of banqueters, who took their pleasure in singing and dancing. But now, the latter part of the day had come on. And thus ends book 17.